Members, will call the meeting, capital investment meeting to order. Representative Albright, you came in with me early, and so have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I did, Mr. Chair.
Could you move approval of the minutes, please, from April 4th?
I would recommend for move of the minutes from the last meeting.
Thank you, Representative Albright. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
The vote
motion passed. Representative Hausman, Chair Hausman, do you want to move your bill, please?
Mr. Chair, I will move House File Number 270, and that is the underlying bill. And then, if you would like me also to move the DE1 amendment, which is the delete everything, substituting
yes,
this, I would move the DE1 amendment.
Okay, members. Chair Hausman has moved the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion, questions? All those in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Madam Chair, do you want to describe your bill?
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's an $800 million bonding bill. We'll talk about the last page at the appropriate time. But I wanted to set the context to talk about the opportunity that the bill presents. It provides an opportunity to invest in statewide infrastructure, to reduce the backlog for crumbling wastewater infrastructure, for HEPR, for local roads and bridges. It preserves assets, and of course the largest of those is the Capitol. We'll talk more about that. It completes projects that have been in the queue for far too long. It continues to take advantage of historic low interest rates, creates temporary, permanent, and spin-off jobs vital to the state's continued economic recovery. It makes strategic investments with a high return on investment. I hope you find it as a fair and geographically balanced package that treats the entire state the same. And I am pleased that parts of this bill have very strong and united business community support. For transit investment in the bill, Minneapolis Regional, St. Paul area, Twin West, Eden Prairie, and the Civic Center projects, Greater Mankato, Rochester, and St. Cloud. It allocates $800 million, which is well within our debt service management guidelines, which we take very seriously and which I protect all the time. It continues to help push us out of the recession. But I think more importantly, stretches the taxpayer dollars further at a time of record low interest rates. If we do these projects today, the taxpayer dollar goes further than if we wait until inflation returns. The last bond sale had the historically low interest rate of 2.06%. The bill does about $100 million in asset preservation, which I know is important to everyone here. It provides public safety through flood mitigation, better local roads and bridges, dam repair, housing, and, of course, the St. Peter Security Hospital. I would even suggest that almost $100 million of this in wastewater infrastructure, local roads and bridges, takes some of the stress off of local property taxes as we partner with local communities in this needed infrastructure. So we take advantage of low construction bids before inflation returns. We protect natural resources, whether they are in the Voyageurs National Park or the Big Lake Sanitary District or Albert Lee's Fountain Lake. We make Minnesota cleaner. As I said, we complete projects that are long past ready to go, that maximize, in some cases, non-state money, federal, local, and private, and we make a big dent in the backlog for higher education, for transportation, for housing, for public safety, for clean water, wastewater, natural resources, and regional economic development. And Mr. Chair, I would then like to just first go through the spreadsheet. You have a number of handouts, and I'll reference them as we get to the appropriate place on the spreadsheet. And we begin with the University of Minnesota, and there we started with a very large sheet, and so it did not copy very well. So get out your glasses if you want to see what this is doing. We've asked the University of Minnesota for a list that would simply fund the $30 million that we have, so that we have a very definite sense of what is being renovated in that portion. We begin the Eddy Hall and Tate Laboratory and a St. Paul Campus Laboratory replacement and some research laboratory improvement. The one I want to talk a bit about, we had a hearing on the Bell Museum, and that is the state's natural history museum, established in 1872. And in 1872, the visionaries who sat in our chairs here in the legislature said, we should collect the natural history. We should collect it, we should catalog it, we should take good care of it, and we're going to give the responsibility to the University of Minnesota. And the state hasn't always been a good partner in that. We decided it, we assigned it to them, but now I think we have a need to say, since 1872, it's time for the state to step up and say, we need to protect this resource. If we move it to this new location on the St. Paul campus, it connects with other collections already there, and it frees up some space on the Minneapolis campus for, I believe, the School of Design. So it further partners with two other things. Representative Carlson for some years has been trying to rebuild the planetarium. That didn't find a home until they started talking to the University of Minnesota. They have now partnered with the university, so this will be the Natural History Museum and the planetarium in the same space. And though it's not funded in this bill, I'm hoping that if we are successful this year, finally, after a decade in accomplishing this, that we would also then fund the external classroom that the DNR thinks about. And that is the Minnesota Prairie and Forest, that all the kids in Minnesota can come and see our natural history, but they can also see what a Minnesota Prairie and Forest looks like in the spring, summer, fall, winter. So it provides a unique opportunity. There's more space there and provides that. I believe that visitors will quadruple at that site. Minsky, you see, we do have their list of that funds exactly the $50 million, so you can quickly see if you have an institution in your area or a campus, you can quickly skim down to see whether your campus is funded, because all of those projects, if we're successful with the $50 million, will in fact be funded. I'll go over language a little later, which will give you the specific campuses for the system-wide projects, and so we'll revisit that when we go over the language. There are individual campuses represented here, and then some system-wide. And I do want to say just a word about their highest priority, the Science Education Center at the Metro State. That is the only four-year institution in the entire seven-county metro area, and it hasn't had a science building. That has been very awkward for students trying to get their degrees, and we hope this finally helps with the challenges that students have had about that. We heard the request that Representative McNamer brought on school energy efficiency revolving loan program. He has received calls from superintendents across the state. This is something everyone understands. They'd like to retrofit a building that will allow them to save some energy and therefore less impact on their bottom line. And so we're going to give that a try to see whether we might be able to help with some of that. You may recall a number of years ago there was a shooting at the Red Lake School. Those students, by the way, traveled to one of the other states this year to share their experiences. We've never quite finished that project. We've worked at it, but we just haven't quite finished it. And so we are revisiting that project, and we hope finally to provide a safe, secure place at the Red Lake School. We have just a very small amount for the Minnesota State Academies. I understand they have a project funded in the K-12 funding division too. There's a new leader there that we're all getting to know, and perhaps that would be a place that we could visit when we tour. Flood mitigation has always been something we've committed to. In every one of these areas where we have a pot of money, we have met with the department and we have tried to understand what are their priorities this year, what do we think they can do this year, and we've tried to come up with a number that seems reasonable for 2013. You may remember that Representative Dorholt and Representative O'Driscoll came forward with the language change and extension on a Central Minnesota regional park that that we'd like to help them with. On line 47, we have two dams. There are again, there's a priority list of the top four. The first two, priority one and two, are not ready. Priority three and four are. That's the Rapidan Dam and the City of Champlin, the Elm Creek Dam. We're going to try to do at least two of those, the third and fourth priority. The Elm Creek Dam was originally constructed in 1936 under a WPA program. We often hear that as we go back and look at history. Frequently, a piece of infrastructure around the state was constructed under a WPA program, and that's the case with the Elm Creek Dam. But due to inadequate capacity and extraordinary preventative maintenance issues, the dam is in desperate need of replacement. So in a couple of those areas, we are still working with the department on the language and hope that that we have arrived at some good language. We fund some trail projects that have been backlogged since, in some cases, 2010. Trail projects come right out of the local community. They begin there, and all of the work is done by those local communities. And they come here and tell the story. And you heard both Loose Line and Heartland tell their story. Local communities understand now it does link to their economic health. And I think our poster child for that early on was Lanesboro, where they understood the role the trail played in one part of their economic revitalization. And so I'll read those later when we go over the language, but just so that you understand the criteria, when they determined what trails they were bringing to us, they want a high-quality destination experience, they want it well-located for high use, and they want to enhance connectivity, and we share all of those values. All of these communities believe that these trails result in local job retention and creation, that they create business opportunities, and they support other tourism activities in their areas. They provide a safe transportation alternative, complementing roads and commuter routes. When we traveled, wherever we traveled around the state, we would ask, do the local people here use this trail to get to school or work? And in every case, we were told that is, in fact, one of the uses. And I believe it was in Appleton where some of the citizens in that town thought this would be a totally unnecessary expenditure that they would never use. And once it was built, they started walking. And so we believe that that this is contributing also to healthy citizens. There's a larger amount for this is just the RIM critical habitat match that DNR has. We'll say more about RIM further on. Representative Fisher, you may remember, brought the groundwater monitoring issue to us and pointed out that the only reliable way to know, to understand about water level and what's happening with groundwater quantity in Minnesota is to monitor. And so this information is critical to develop management plans, to set allocation limits, and plan for long-term sustainability. And so that is in the bill. We have, for years and years and years, debated the issue of school trust fund lands. In the last few years, there was finally a substantial new approach. Representative Purcell has a bill that looks at some of these. And there is a letter in your packet that comes from at least 20 groups around the state supporting this. And they tell the story in this way. This bill provides a manner in which fragile public lands in school trust holdings such as shoreline, native prairie, designated old growth forests, wildlife management areas, and scientific and natural areas can be managed conservatively to retain their unique natural characteristics while the school trust fund can be compensated with bonding revenue. As we move forward with this, DNR will be prepared to recommend which fragile lands cannot sustain development for the sake of revenue. That's what they've been charged to do. But in some cases, if they determine that there are fragile lands that cannot sustain development for the sake of revenue, that they would make those recommendations. We certainly don't want to sacrifice part of our natural heritage. Among other supporters of this, by the way, is the Minnesota School Board Association, which describes to us over 150,000 acres of trust land under DNR management that prohibit the generation of revenue because they are located in state parks, wildlife management areas, and the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. And so the Minnesota School Boards Association supports that particular approach. We have been working with Albert Lee ever since Dan Dorman was here. And there is a local cleanup issue, and I don't know, maybe this is the last. It's been a long time coming, but they have. We've visited down there a couple of times, and we're hoping that perhaps we've sort of resolved the issue there. I don't know how many of you have toured the Fort Snelling Upper Bluff with us. Talk about protecting history. We are letting those buildings crumble, and so we keep plugging away at some of the restoration of historic buildings, and this bill does a little bit of that. You have a letter in your packet from many, many, many groups. It is like 2.5 pages, I think, of groups, of conservation groups, of wildlife groups, of every kind of sports group and environmental group supporting RIM, Reinvest in Minnesota. And they point out that on this line of the bill, we do in fact match federal funds. In order to restore and protect wetlands in flood and erosion prone lands, we enhance wildlife habitat, we improve water quality, we reduce soil erosion, and we all benefit from enhanced floodwater storage and groundwater recharge. They point out that the RIM Reserve investments put cash in rural land owners' hands to create jobs in land restoration and native seed production. Management of these lands can supply periodic harvest of biomass for growing rural economies under authorized management plans, and economic studies have shown that 11 jobs are created for every $1 million flowing through RIM Reserve. I think we sometimes see this one and think that particular line is not putting people to work, but in fact they would tell us differently. We do asset preservation at the Minnesota Zoo. Their needs and dreams are big, and I hope that next year we can continue to invest and perhaps do a little better, but for now we have provided asset preservation. And Representative Erdahl, I think, has just introduced the capital restoration bill. I think it's got a House file number by now. He has provided leadership. You probably all remember his standing on the floor and holding that piece of the capital. And so we hope. Last year we did $44 million. This year we hope to move forward with $109 million. Next year $94 million, and then we are done. And it's through leadership like Representative Erdahl has provided, and Representative Dean has certainly been part of that effort, and we're grateful for that. You may recall the Amateur Sports Commission was here, and they talked about some of the air quality issues that are happening in our arenas, and so we plug away a little bit at that. Representative Swedzinski's community was here, and I thought gave a very, very impressive presentation on the role that amateur sports provide in their community. And they always, every time a community comes, they do in fact link it to the health of their regional economy. And that was the message we heard from them. We have asset preservation scattered throughout, never as much as we would like. I should say, by the way, before we leave the Capitol, I talked about some of these projects having been in the queue for a long time. It was pointed out that the need for a comprehensive preservation effort was identified 30 years ago, and that we now are getting the warning that further inaction will lead to significantly larger annual expenses needed to address these problems without fixing or solving the root cause. Our capital must be preserved so it can serve the people of Minnesota in the same manner that it has since its completion in 1905. Going on to transportation, there is a local bridge list. We try as much as possible to give you lists so that you know what is what's there. This is a little, I think it's a pretty easy one to sort of skim down and find out whether your area has local bridges that are on the radar screen of MnDOT. We also, in the past, have not made significant contributions toward local roads. But I think what we're hearing is the burden on the local road issue has gotten greater. We were even told in the Transportation Committee, even if we raised the gas tax, there would be a problem with the formula for helping local communities with roads. So we have a larger amount than we normally do. Again, I'll go over some of these when we get to the language, Greater Minnesota Transit, Minnesota Valley Regional Rail, passenger rail, that's the intercity passenger rail where we're beginning to connect with Rochester and Duluth and other areas. We move a little bit in the direction of safe routes to school. A couple of airports are in the bill. One is under transportation. The other one you'll see under deed because it's really sewer issues and others, not so much airport issues. And the ports, and they are Red Wing and Winona and St. Paul and Duluth. I don't know if I've missed one. We just keep giving $1 or $2 million and we never solve the problem. Red Wing has a very, very major issue that they hope they can move forward on. And so we've tried to be a little more generous with ports than we normally do. On the first item of the Metropolitan Council, I can't remember. We had lots of overviews, and I can't remember if Met Council said this in our committee or if they said it in transportation. I'm on both, so I'm going to just remind you. They gave the following information, and the headline was, Metro Area is the Economic Engine of the State's Economy. The seven-county metro area has a gross metro product of approximately $200 billion, making it the 13th largest metropolitan economy in the nation. It represents, that seven-county metro area, approximately two-thirds of the state's GDP. The metro economy is larger than half the states in this country. And I give that background to say, this particular line in our bill has been neglected for a long time. But one of the letters you'll see in your packet comes from the St. Paul Area Chamber, the Minneapolis Regional Chamber, the Twin West, and the Eden Prairie. And in other parts of the country, the business community has been leading the charge for some time on this issue. Our business community is now moving ahead and giving us this message. They say, we represent the five largest local chambers of commerce in Minnesota and right to support significant bonding for transit investment this year. They remind us that the public supports transit improvement, and they give these statistics. Two-thirds of the voters statewide, 66%, say they would like to use public transit, but that it's not convenient or accessible to them. And that's across the state. This is not just a metro issue. These numbers are remarkably stable from the previous poll they took in January of 2012. And finally, they say a 2013 poll shows 70% of voters statewide now back using state bonding funds to move forward with Southwest LRT. Even though they are in other parts of the state, they understand eventually they're going to use some of this system. This is an increase. Now it's 70%. In 2012, it was 61%. So as we build out the system, people are understanding it does affect them regardless of where they live. And so they remind us that business supports transit investment. And they do it in this way. Our region is competing with others for jobs. And increasingly, companies are looking to locate in places with robust transit options. We five chambers and our members know from research and firsthand experience that our competitor regions are enjoying substantial returns from their investment in transit. We understand that it is time to move forward with an approach that will help us attract and build a strong future workforce in the Twin Cities. And we know that with low interest rates and the opportunity to create construction jobs, now is an excellent time to invest in our future. That's a very strong statement on their on our behalf on this project. We've been trying for years to fund the Bloomington Cedar Avenue Bridge, which is a connection across, is it a river or a natural area? I can't. Trying to remember this. We've visited there. And it actually is a commuter route that isn't available right now. People do, as much as we find this hard to believe if we're not bikers, Representative Lilly, of course, would understand this, people bike to work. They commute to work, and that's a commuting route. We funded an East Metro Environmental Learning Center that all the schools use, but we have never, even though we have advanced this a number of years, we have never done the same in the northwestern part of the Seven County area, and Springbrook Nature Center serves that purpose. We have some miscellaneous ones I'll say specifically. Again, the Minneapolis Sculpture Garden is one we have tried to advance for a very long time. I must tell you that whenever I take my out-of-town guests around, it is one of the first stops we make. But it is becoming increasingly ragged looking. And it's because of the infrastructure underneath. And we're not going to do anything about art. That's not our purview. But we do the infrastructure that you don't see to make certain that the that it looks good on into the future. And that's what we fund here. Under Department of Human Services, the very big item is the state hospital on the St. Peter campus. At the moment, the mentally ill and dangerous residents are housed in the same facilities as the sex offenders. And we're focusing on the security hospital, the category that's mentally ill and dangerous, and wanting to restructure that campus in a way that that provides some separation among those populations, a very large item. If you've been on this committee or you've tracked bonding bills, you know for a number of years we have been trying to provide cemetery markers for people who died in state hospitals, and all we did was a little cement tube with a number in the ground. And that's what Remembering with Dignity is. We just keep plugging away with small amounts of money to replace some of those. And I want to just say a word about the St. David Center in Hennepin County. That was heard in another committee, and I tried as much as possible to get all of the items here, but I'm not certain we did. And so I wanted to say just a word about that. They are going to leverage with this $8.5 million in private contributions to renovate and expand the center. Among other things, what this center does is provide assessment for children with developmental needs and emerging mental health concerns. And we know the importance of that, certainly in the year 2013. 2,200 children and their families benefit from St. David Center each year. It takes a multidisciplinary approach that's innovative in the field of healthcare and that leads to better results and is far more cost-effective. They believe that St. David Center can serve as a model for pediatric care. Their success rate is 98% for children receiving pediatric therapy and up to 90% for children in autism and mental health treatment. They believe that it's clear that early identification, intervention, and treatment of children with developmental problems is the key to success, but waiting lists for assessments can be 18 months long. So that is the St. David's Center. We funded earlier, was it just last year, Representative Lilly? We funded a larger amount for the Tubman Center, and there is a small amount that they would like to complete that project, and you see that as well. Housing, I think specifically, we perhaps have some language in there that focuses on women and children. Now, the most controversial part of the bill, veterans housing. And we spent a lot of time on that in this committee. And what you see here is only asset preservation, and I will talk about this later. But Representative Ward, I hope you, Mr. Chair, I hope that you might be willing to provide a leadership role in pulling a number of us to a table. I would suggest that perhaps Representative Dean and I would join you there, that Representative Detmer would join you there, that Representative Murphy and her minority lead, and probably Health and Human Services. Because as we talked in this committee, we said, why can't they stay in their homes as long as possible? Can we facilitate that in a better way? Why can't they stay in their neighborhood, their community nursing home, especially if we're closing some of those nursing homes because there are beds? Representative Carlson told me in the last day or two that he remembers when they first talked about building the Vets Hospital, that there was a discussion. Should we figure out a way to have the veterans go to doctors in their communities, or should we centralize? And that's the issue we have now. Veterans travel, they take a day out of their life, maybe 2 days, travel from all over the state to go here. Have we served them well with centralizing? And just to remind members, I distributed, and I think it's in your packets again. No, this I didn't, I think we didn't distribute. We totaled up what our investments in the Minneapolis home have been thus far, since 1989, over $50 million. Their request again this year is for $54.1 plus $1.6 million in asset preservation, meaning our investment just this year would be $55.7 in one location. So we would be well over $100 million in one location. Now, what are the outcomes for that? I spoke to my veterans officer in Ramsey County, and she spends a great deal of her time working with the families of veterans in Ramsey County to look for temporary housing until they can get in to the Minneapolis home. There is an 8 to 12 month wait. And so this woman in Ramsey County spends time working with families looking for temporary housing. We had a number of bills seeking homes around the state, in Montevideo, in Brainerd, in Bemidji. There are several bills about just looking at what we should do about northern Minnesota veterans homes. Representative Norton had a bill on Rochester. There was one for Beltrami County. So clearly there's a desire on the part of many to think about this in a different way. But when we were debating this in Ways and Means, Representative Detmer handed me a note with this question. How can we go forward with these new vets homes when the department's priority is finishing the Minneapolis Vets Home Phase 3? So we're sort of stuck. We're spending a lot of money. It's not like we're not going to spend a lot of money. But is it solving the problem? We were told that there are 874 on the waiting list. I think Representative Switzinski asked the question, might some of them be in our community nursing homes? We don't necessarily know where those 874 are. So what I wish we could do as legislators is take the initiative. By the way, I heard a rumor that there might even be a press release that some veterans would issue after this saying Democrats don't support building veterans homes. I hope that's not the case, and I hope that we never, never, never politicize housing veterans, because I know every single person in this room wants to deal with those 874. we're told over and over that a large segment of our homeless population living on the street are veterans. Something's wrong. My understanding is that the federal government has only 82 or 86 million for the entire nation. So is this model working? Do we expect we're going to get a good portion of that, or will it go to some of the other states? I would suggest, Mr. Chair, that a group of legislators ask to meet with our entire congressional delegation and talk about this and say the federal model doesn't seem to be working for Minnesota. Can we keep people in their homes if they want to stay there? Can we house them in their local nursing home if that's what they want? Can we distribute homes more broadly across the state so people can stay close to family and friends? And to say, I think, you know, one of the problems that Representative Detmer pointed out to me was we have to build to federal standards or we jeopardize the per diem, I think, was what I heard. So can't we, in conversation with our congressional delegation, figure that out? If we aren't solving the problem, if we aren't fully housing our veterans, it just seems to me we need to be prepared to sort of break out of the mold and say, should Minnesota be doing something different so that we are more successful in this? So I do think this has the potential to be one of the more controversial parts of the bill because our work isn't finished. So what you do see is asset preservation for all of the homes, for Hastings, for Fergus Falls, for Luverne, for Minneapolis, for Silver Bay, and the Little Falls Cemetery. That is the group of projects that the
Department. Hausman, thank you for that dialogue. It's a good conversation, a good dialogue, and I would welcome the opportunity to join my colleagues to discuss this. You know, with the Department of Veteran Affairs, I see Mike up in the audience, and to look at possible alternatives and options that we might have in Minnesota to house the 174 plus that are coming in our future, you know, that are not housed somewhere now and have needs. Representative Detmer has a question pertaining to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's more than just a question. It's just maybe an observation of the legislation that we have before us, and again, I would like to work on this policy, this idea of, you know, looking at our private homes and our communities and so forth. That's a good idea. I think we need to pursue that. But in the same sense, I think the perception out there when people look at this bonding bill is, you know, we started the renovation of the Minneapolis home, I think, back in 2009, and we're looking at phase three of $54 million. If you take a look, if you just go through the bonding bill, have we really prioritized, and are we really, really doing what we should be doing for our men and women who have served our country? And I really feel that the perception out there that we're not. I think that if you look at, we're putting money into museums, state trails, sculpture gardens, nature centers, and so forth. I think our men and women that have served our country over the years really deserve better. So I think you're right. There's a perception out there, Madam Chair, that maybe we should be looking at finishing that project in Minneapolis and then going forward with some of these other concepts, these other ideas. In fact, I just found out there is a private home in Stillwater that is certified by the VA. I just found out by a constituent who is her husband is a Vietnam War veteran, Agent Orange problem, and she has to drive him down to Stillwater. She would like to have our private home in Forest Lake be veteran certified, and they're checking into it. So there is ways that private homes can get certified, but it's a process, and I'm waiting to hear from the home in Stillwater. But I really believe we should be taking a look at this whole bill and prioritizing it and taking a look at what to finish that project in Minneapolis. It's yeah, I think many of you have been in one of our veterans' homes. I think we need to take care of that investment that these men and women have invested their lives into this country. So just a comment. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I think that is exactly the misunderstanding that could come out of this. But I would challenge us to do our work in the interim and make next year the year of the veteran. I would support $100 million in housing next year for veterans in a bill. But right now, to continue down the course that continues to keep veterans without a place strikes me as it's, what's that? The definition of insanity is continuing to do things in the same way. And to just, you know, kind of pound the table every year and say, no, we're going to do Minneapolis first. We're going to put all our money into there first without an understanding of the bigger challenge strikes me somehow as not visionary thinking that's going to solve the problem. So it certainly will be something that can be politicized and game playing with it, or we can resolve as a legislature to responsibly sit down around a table and say, how do we solve the problem so that 874 people aren't on a waiting list? So, Mr. Chair, I hope that that is an opportunity. By the way, MHFA, when they realized they were making no progress on housing homeless people, they came to us with an idea. We were always doing public housing, public housing, public housing. And they said, there are all of these nonprofits, like Lutheran Social Service, that we could partner with. And they brought the program to us that we then started with nonprofit bonding. It's in this bill. I will come to it soon. So it was an area where a department looked at our inability to make progress, and they made a different suggestion, and that is what we have been doing. And we're now partnering with nonprofits to be hopefully more aggressive in solving the problem. In the next area of deed, there is a letter in your packets that comes from the Mankato Chamber, the Rochester Chamber, and the St. Cloud Chamber. And they give the argument that I think all of these communities in this section would. And that is, in these ways that the state partners with regions, it serves as an important catalyst for growth in their region. And I believe we all benefit with healthy regional economies. We don't want everybody to move to an urban core. We want healthy regional economies all over the state. They point out they've done some work. Estimates show that these projects will create or retain more than 2,000 jobs and result in an increase of more than $63 million in annual economic impact. They say that $80 million in local matches are in place and committed, and they have come together to share that particular set of statistics. The 2009 letter that we shared with you from Mayo Clinic already referenced this, and I'd like to remind you of one paragraph of their letter. This was the letter from 2009 from the Mayo Clinic. Today, our community stands at the crossroads of exciting growth opportunities. As we collectively focus on what it means to create an integrated community, Mayo partnership around the concept of destination medical community with a coordinated downtown development plan, the Civic Center is an important component of that vision. The expansion and renovation of Mayo Civic Center will play a pivotal role in plans to capitalize on the strong momentum to further position Minnesota as a national leader in healthcare, scientific research, and the life sciences. And it would support the continued development of Rochester, Minnesota as the premier destination medical community. So as early as 2009, Mayo Clinic saw this as a key to this destination medical community. It's one, Representative Davids, I think, made a very strong statement in committee when they were before us, and I think this is kind of the first step that we can take toward meeting that vision. I want to say just a word about the Red Wing River Renaissance to show how occasionally a project gets a number of benefits. There's a levee road project that raises the low point in the roadway to reduce the frequency of flooding. It also realigns the trail to segregate pedestrian and bicycle traffic from vehicles. So there's flood mitigation, there's safety, and then they have a small boat harbor project with a retaining wall. And they, again, as every other community, cite the economic benefits. The levee road serves the only grain export terminal on the Mississippi River between St. Paul and Winona. Reconstruction will improve efficiencies for truck fleeting and farm commodity distribution, which may lead to future investment. And they cite the regional tourism benefits. It connects the Red Wing Riverfront and downtown Red Wing to the Cannon Valley and Goodhue Pioneer Regional Trails. When we talked about trails earlier, we talked about connectivity, and part of their project is the connectivity. And in each of these cases, we get huge packets from a local community, and I just want to reference one, which is the Red Wing Grain looking for GRW, I think is the name. And they tell this story. In 1873, Red Wing was the largest primary wheat market in the world. Today, we are the only one left carrying on this tradition in corn and soybeans, serving farmers in a 75-mile radius. We currently load between 400 and 500 barges a year from our terminal, which then float to the Gulf of Mexico and are loaded onto vessels for exports. We currently provide services to over 1,500 farmer customers in a 75-mile radius of Red Wing, unloading over 25,000 trucks a year into our Red Wing grain facility. And they, so one of the advantages for them, by moving the bike trail off the levee, it will not only help the bikers, walkers, and joggers, but it takes away a hazard for the truckers. So local businesses see the value of this. You may remember that the story in the case of Truman, some of these programs don't fit our larger projects. In this case, the PFA project. In Truman, they thought they had fixed that problem, and then they had a flood. And ever since that flood, if they get a 2 or 3 inch rain, the basements in that town flood, and they can't get flood insurance, as I recall. And so it doesn't fit other programs, and so it's a small community we're helping out with some safety issues. Worthington had an extension for their Biotechnology Advancement Center, where they believe that low-cost, high-value education brings the dynamic industry of agriculture biosciences together with education, provides a place for business support center for current businesses, as well as making incubator space available for startup companies. So in this area, in every single one of these lines, I think you could make that argument. And to represent Detmer's point about priorities, it is precisely when we keep our state healthy with tax-paying citizens that we can do the other big challenges that we have to do. You can't disconnect the two. You just can't disconnect the two. In your packet is a sheet that looks like this. And this was presented at a Council of State Governments meeting last summer in Cleveland. The speaker was Mark Breederland from the Michigan Sea Grant Extension, and he described the difference between the old economy and the new economy. Now, we can stay stuck in the 1950s and keep doing things the same way we have always, or we can see whether the world has changed. And what they're saying in the old economy was that high-quality physical environment was a luxury in the way of attracting cost-conscious business. So you didn't want to waste money on high-quality physical environment because that was just wasting money that you should that wouldn't then attract cost-conscious business. In the new economy, physical and cultural amenities are key in attracting the knowledge workers. It's a different way of thinking about how we build our communities. And that's what the chambers saw when they visited Denver specifically. And then in the bottom slide, in the old economy, people followed the jobs. Where's the manufacturing plant? Wherever. In the new economy, talented, well-educated people choose their location first and then look for or create jobs. Now, I'm telling you, we have lots of opportunities to speak to large groups. And since I heard this speaker, in a number of my speeches, I've referenced this, the difference between the old economy and the new economy, people following jobs or choosing where you want to live based on amenities, and then you figure it out. And you know how you always look at the faces of the audience? All the young people in the audience, when I say that, do this. Shaking that head. They all know this. They all know it's a different world. And so the pieces in this section of the bill that we might discard as unnecessary and low priorities, I would say we are foolhardy if we do that, because they're the very thing that keep our state healthy and competitive and attracting the workers we need, attracting the demographic we need, and keeps us healthier so we can do all the other good stuff that has to be done. In the old economy, dirty, ugly, and poor quality environment were common outcomes that we believe did not prevent growth. In the new economy, clean, green environment and proximity to open space and quality recreational opportunities are critical. So the parks and trails that we think are frills are part of the proximity to open space that people are looking for today. And we ignore that at our peril. We are the Public Facilities Authority. You have a list that shows all of the cities on the list. The reason we can't always tell you exactly how far down 25 million will get us, it kind of depends on your community to do the right thing. So you always have to work with your community. Are they filling out the paperwork? Are they doing what they need to do? I can tell you that department is the most helpful department. All you have to do is call them, and they help you sort through the list. The Big Lake Sanitary District is a very unusual situation. It has gained the support of the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District and members of the Carleton County Board and Planning Commission. The project has been in progress for the past 8 years. 50% of the on-site septic systems are failing or do not meet the requirements of Carleton County on-site sewer ordinance. They have decided on what they believe is the most logical and cost-effective. But in this case, the logical and cost-effective solution endorsed almost unanimously by the Sanitary District Board and residents, unfortunately, does not fit with the MPCA's parameters of assigning funding priority points. In all likelihood, the project will never be funded under the present point system. So some projects don't fit, and in this case, we're trying to be helpful. And then finally, housing. And there's one community that I have to commend more than any other. All of the housing advocates in this state have organized as no other community. And so when I ask anyone in that advocacy community, how much should I put in the bill? They all say $50 million. And I ask, how should it be divided? And they all say $15 million for public housing and $35 million for nonprofit housing. They got together. They're on the same page. Yes, they would like four times that, but they're also realistic. And I think this is probably not in your packets, but let me just hold up the state of Minnesota. You always ask.
Madam Chair, it is in a
package. It is. You always ask, does it go everywhere? Or, I mean, there's always the suspicion. I hope it's not just going to be built in the metro area. And the map shows on both sides all of those projects all around the state that are part of this effort. And then just to understand how sometimes even a state agency project that is advanced by them is also recognized by the local government. And in this case, again, the Oliver Kelly Farm, we've been trying to do this forever. I have a letter from the Sherburne County Board of Commissioners. And they say, while this important facility is in Sherburne County, it is a treasure for all of Minnesota. The Kelly Farm provides experiences that help visitors understand one of the most important industries in our state's economy. And it is signed by the members of the Board of Commissioners. So, again, though a state agency advances it, when it is in a local community, there is strong support for it. Mr. Chair, I want to just go over a little bit of the language. So if you have the bill before you, I'll just move quickly through. There aren't many places where we'll cite, but Under the University of Minnesota on page 2, you see that Eddie Hall is for international and transfer student admissions programs. You see
members,
that
members, Chair Holzman is referring to the DE1 amendment here. Okay, just so that you're clear on that. Go ahead, Chair Holzman.
On page 3, the Tate Lab is for use by the School of Physics and Astronomy and the School of Earth Sciences. I want specifically to point out Subdivision 7, the research facility improvement, to replace the B research facility. A very, very, you know something about the concerns about what's happening to our natural environment there, and so we were pleased to see that request. And we talked about the Bell Museum earlier. On page 4, just going through some of the state colleges and universities, in Staples, those are spaces for science, technology, and math initiatives, agriculture, and energy programs. We already talked about the Metro State Science Center. On page 6, are where the lists are that you don't see on the spreadsheet. So the system-wide science, technology, engineering, math are at Century College, Minnesota State University Moorhead, Northeast Higher Education District Itasca Community College, Mesabi Range Community and Technical College in Eveleth. And the system-wide classroom renovations, which are classrooms to meet workforce training needs, are at Century College, Inver Hills Community College, Northeast Higher Education District Vermilion Community College, and St. Paul College. And the system-wide energy renovation and additions at Anoka Technical, Century, Minnesota West Community and Technical, Canby and Jackson, and Northeast Higher Ed District Itasca Community College. So it gives you just a little bit of a sense of where some of those those things lie. On page 10, the flood hazard mitigation, they specifically include money for Moorhead, South St. Paul, and Inver Grove Heights, my committee administrator, Ms. Nash, I just didn't note there are two or three other cities in northern Minnesota. Do you recall what they are?
Moorhead and Oslo are the ones at the top priority.
Oslo? Okay.
Oslo.
Okay, there's a little more up in northern Minnesota.
We're going to Norway?
On page 11, you see the language about in Blue Earth and Champlin, I do want the department to have a comfort level on the issue of the match, and so I want to protect all these projects, and I don't want them to fall victim to a line item veto or anything. So we take seriously what the department's point of view is. So we're still visiting there about that issue of the match. State trails, again, those are not on the spreadsheet, but just to read them into the record, the Blazing Star Trail, Camp Ripley Veterans State Trail, Casey Jones Trail, the Cuyuna Lakes Trail, and you see segments from Crosby to Deerwood, Paul Bunyan State Trail, segment connecting Sagamore Unit of the Cuyuna Country State Recreation Area, Paul Bunyan State Trail to Riverton, Gateway Trail between Scandia and William O'Brien, Gitchigami Trail, this is on page 12 now, from Grand Marais to Cascade, 5 mile bituminous extension of the Glacial Lake State Trail in New London to Sibley State Park, Goodhue Pioneer Trail between White Willow and Goodhue, the Heartland Trail from Detroit Lakes to Frazee, and to begin work on Moorhead to Buffalo State Park. The Loose Line and developing a parallel horse trail between the cities of Winsted and cities of Cedar Mills. And then on page 13, Milltown's Trail segment between Lake Vilsby and the Cannon Valley Trail between Dundas and Northfield. Minnesota River Trail between Mankato and St. Peter. So those are the specific trails that we have included. There is under the capital, by the way, on page 17, though we have 109 for the restoration, there is a cash designation for rent and relocation, and that I'll say a little more about the spreadsheet and the cash target later. And then on page 21, the designation of where the Greater Minnesota Transit goes. And the grants go to Mankato, The Rainbow Rider for bus garages in Elbow Lake, Morris, Wheaton, Lowry, and Alexandria. There's a grant to St. Cloud and the Candy Ojai area for a bus storage garage in Wilmer. Those are MnDOT's priorities for on the list. We didn't quite fund, I think they have maybe one or two other projects that we didn't fund this year. And you recall the story of the Southern Minnesota Valley Regional Rail rehab, and it keeps getting extended, the track now between Norwood and Young America. Some of you thought that they should be looking for a local match, and so we put a little gentle language in here on lines 32 to 34. Before seeking appropriations in the future, the authority must seek local contributions from the member counties. They indicated that there's some organizational rules or something that prohibited, and we thought maybe there would be ways around that, so we make a gentle suggestion that that looking for some local money might be helpful. On the Transit Capital Improvement Program, we know that's a system that's moving on a number of fronts, and so what we do on page 23, on lines 23 to 30, is we simply list all the projects that we understand are currently, we don't list those that are finished, but we list anything else we understood was sort of in the process and potentially moving forward, that gives some maximum flexibility as that funding is needed. I suppose I could read those into the record just to be on the safe side. There's a Lake Street and I-35W transit station that's quite dangerous and uncomfortable to get to. Botano Boulevard, East 7th and St. Paul, I-94 Gateway, Nicollet Avenue. Nicollet Avenue, they're hoping we're now moving in the direction of streetcars. It's a less expensive capital investment than LRT. Red Rock, Riverview, Robert Street, Rush Line, Snelling Avenue, and Southwest. All of them are going forward. Snelling, by the way, is simply a bus rapid ride where hopefully a bus will come along every 7 minutes and connect to the Central Corridor, which I think now they call the Green Line. I have to break our bad habits. I don't know if I mentioned on page 26, there is this growing issue in the metropolitan cities to reduce the amount of inflow and infiltration to the Metropolitan Council's Metropolitan Sanitary Sewer Disposal System. They impose some fairly hefty costs on local communities, and so as we do with wastewater infrastructure, we're trying to partner with some local communities to help with that. You note on page 27 is where I referenced the grave markers for unmarked graves, deceased residents of state hospitals. The language is there. We specifically focus on page 28, the additional money for the Harriet Tubman Center, that it's used as a regional safety center for domestic violence, youth programs, mental and chemical health services. I'm not sure, Representative Clark isn't here, whether we got the right language there. We might have to revisit that. Veterans Affairs, as I said, the Little Falls Cemetery, Fergus Falls, Hastings, Luverne, Minneapolis, Silver Bay, and the Little Falls Veterans Cemetery. There's a very sad story on page 32, Wade Stadium. I talked about WPA era before. Wade Stadium was built in the WPA era. It's, I think, either the only ballpark left in the entire nation that was. And here was the interesting reuse at the time. At the time, they were digging up Grand Avenue. I suppose they were going to pave it. But they carefully removed those bricks from Grand Avenue, and they carried them to Wade Stadium, and they reused those bricks to build Wade Stadium. This winter, a wall collapsed, one of those brick walls. So we're studying to see, you know, is this a bit of history that we can save? They tell me that people travel from around the country, those interested in these historic places, to visit that. On page 34, the Minnesota Children's Museum, this is an expansion and exhibit upgrade. that should incorporate the latest research on early learning, allow for new state-of-the-art education facilities, and increase the capacity of visitors to the galleries. That, I don't know if you go to the Children's Museum, but it's a little gets a little crowded in some of these areas from time to time as those small bodies take over the exhibits, and is really successful. And when you're that successful, you need occasionally to provide for more space. We are just finishing. Some of these projects we're just finishing, and I'm hoping that this is sort of the last time we see the Ordway Center, and that will that construction will happen. Unfortunately, we did have to put in that because they are currently striking, that this is not available until the labor contract dispute between the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra and the musicians has been settled, because it would be the place that that group that's not currently playing would be using. So hope that is over soon. I think we're getting there, Mr. Chair. There is one cancellation on page 39. There is a $2 million appropriation. It's for the Alexandria Aircraft Surveillance Facility. Apparently, we bonded for that. It's not going to happen, and so that is canceled. And as a result, you do see that on the last sheet, which we'll summarize. On page 47, you may recall Representative Nornes brought the Fergus Falls Regional Treatment Center. We had to make some changes. You see those changes on page 47. And the Worthington language, that also was changing some language, because that was an additional dollar amount that was left. And so on page 51, there is the language for Worthington. And by the way, on this back part of the bill, if anyone's listening, if there are reporters, if you see things on these last pages that aren't underlined, they are not new. I remember reading a newspaper article that we were doing, I don't know, the planetarium in Minneapolis or something. But when they change language in a section, they have to put the entire section from the previous bill. So if you look at page 54, for example, we are not doing a $9 million grant to the city of St. Paul to redevelop the Como Zoo. It was just in that section. So please, if anybody is reporting on this bill, in the back part of the bill, if we are changing language for one project, we put it in the context of that whole one. So if it's not underlined, it is not new money, and it's not a new project. That's just for the sake of understanding. In the case of on page 56, that's the that's the new language that Dorholt and O'Driscoll brought for the city of Sartell. I think they were before this committee talking about the need to change that language somewhat. And then, members, there's a repealer. On page 59, last year, the authors of the bonding bill shaped a new program, many pages, and it was going to be a program that DEED decided. We would give them authorization to do something like $50 million worth of bonding. And our direction to them was something like, go forth and do good things with state bond funds. And I think they got in trouble, because I mean, we told them, here's the money, and here are the parameters, and now you decide. We gave our bonding authority to them. It ended up being controversial, and so we're repealing that program. We think we probably should have the courage to sit here at this table and debate priorities, as Representative Detmer pointed out. So we are repealing the language that was added last year for that program. So, members, that is the bill. You have a letter in the bill from Minnesota AFL-CIO. They give you lots of their research on jobs. That is a group that has a great interest in this as the chambers do. And now we start the process of moving this bill through. And some will say, the bill is too big, I can't vote for it. And here's the bad news about bonding bills. You don't get to vote for a bill that just funds your project. There's the bad news. Ultimately, you have to vote for a package of infrastructure for the entire state and across all of those sectors. And it's fairly hard to do that across all of those sectors and across the whole state in a tiny bill. So there's the problem. We can't just vote for a bill that contains your project. I would write a different bill if I just needed a simple majority. But this bill, unlike all the other budget bills, requires a supermajority, and that's a more complicated task. And so I say to audience and everyone, everyone has to help pass this bill. We have to work together. And we'll fight and probably will about priorities. I hope they don't get partisan because, frankly, I have to tell you, I just don't think I'm a believer in infrastructure. I do believe it's essential for us to decide what has to be in place in order for the economy to thrive. We have to work together to do that. If you have an interest in one part of the bill, it won't happen unless the bill passes. So everybody in this room and everyone listening, if you are working on a project in this bill, you don't get your project funded unless you help us. It's not going to be easy, and it will require all of us to be part of that effort. So, Mr. Chair, I have completed my description.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the good discussion and information regarding the bonding bill. Representative Dean, Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hausman, thank you for that. Just a process question. The minority received the bill along with the public this morning as we walked in, and you presented the bill over the entirety of the committee hearing this morning. Could you talk to us a little bit about how you see this moving forward, how the public is going to be able to weigh in, mm-hmm. The stakeholder groups, and how we might be able to have questions for you in the committee and be able to offer amendments, and how that process might take place.
Okay. And I will tell you, the majority also saw the bill for the first time because it Ms. Dyson finished it late yesterday. I think the spreadsheet got closed up. I think Ms. Nash called the minority researcher. Were we leaving at about 9:30 or something, saying, "Are you still here? We've got it now." And I think you're all seeing, both majority and minority are seeing the language for the first time this morning. And I think that's why we did it the way we did. One meeting just to present it, the spreadsheet and the language. And Mr. Chair, we don't have, we didn't publish a set of rules, but to the point, I do think it's very, very important for the public to be part of this process. And so we would just request that by hopefully 10 o'clock tomorrow morning would give you enough time to draft any amendments that you want. If we could post all amendments that members are considering by 10 tomorrow morning, that would allow the public to see how we might want to change the bill, and then the public could ask to testify on Thursday. So Thursday we revisit this. Again, we'd ask that that amendments would be available by 10 tomorrow morning. They would be posted for the public. The public can then speak to the bill or the amendments. And then on Thursday is totally devoted to discussion of the bill.
Representative Dean?
Thank you.
Representative Davids?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was quoted in one of the papers yesterday as saying, after the governor released his bonding proposal, that I'm going to get him a book on how to pass a bonding bill 101. Because the way his is structured, it certainly could not receive the votes needed to pass. I want to thank Chair Hausman and congratulate her. Chair Hausman knows how to write a bonding bill that could pass. And I thank you for that. It's more geographically diverse, and it does some very good things for the state of Minnesota. The only There's a couple of questions I think we just have to think about as we go through the next several days. And so I do thank Chair Hausman for putting together, I think it's a pretty good bill myself. Couple of questions we need to think about as we go forward is, where's the Senate bill? We've seen from the we've seen the governor's bill. We've now seen the House bill. Where's the Senate bill? Is there going to be a Senate bill? From what I understand, they don't even have staff hired for bonding committee yet. So that doesn't mean we don't do our work. I'm not saying that at all, but it's a good question that I think needs to be answered. The other question is, we have not done our due diligence. There are members of this committee, and there's some very good projects. I'm intrigued by the St. David's Center. That has to be good just on the face of it. You know, there's some very, very good projects here. But we have four or five freshmen on this committee that I don't think have toured any one of these. Maybe they have in the past, maybe some of them. We don't have a budget set yet, so how do we know what the size of the bonding bill can really be? Number one. Number two is, I think if we're going to spend $800 million, this committee needs to go and look at some of these things. Now, a lot of these, Chair Hausman was absolutely correct, a lot of these have been looked at for many, many years, and pretty much everybody knows what they are. But those are, I guess I really don't have a question, but just some things that the committee will need to be thinking about as we move forward. But Chair Hausman, I think you put together a pretty good bill here, but there's some things I'm concerned about with the due diligence. We're going to spend $800 million, and we haven't taken the tours to see these projects yet. But I will say, you do know how to write a bonding bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Hausman, would you like to respond?
And he reminded me of something that I failed to do when you talked about the budget. I didn't get to the last part of the spreadsheet. So if you'd look again at the spreadsheet, you will see that the total GOM. I was given a target when they determined what debt service they would provide. They said I was to write an $800 million. I can tell you by that time I had reached $940 million. So all I've done recently is cut from $940 to $800. But on the general fund line, Representative Carlson tomorrow, I believe in Ways and Means, will have to work a little bit on my cash target. And it has to do with, because we had two cash items that had to be one was the state capital rent and relocation or something, and the other was the MHFA bonds. I talked about the nonprofit bonds. We pay for them with general fund cash instead. So I think in Ways and Means, Representative Carlson is going to be readjusting my cash target so I can correct that portion of the bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a quick comment. And that'll be done in Ways and Means tomorrow prior to any action on the bill. So we will be following the adjusted targets for the House budget resolution.
Thank you. And Representative David, you are correct in the fact that no matter what the House, what the Senate does or does not do, we still do our due diligence over here. So.
Now, of course, Mr. Chair, I will say, you know, the good news is bonding bills must begin in the House, and the Senate may just choose, if we pass our bill and send it over there, they may just choose to vote on this bill and send it back. So it's possible that that we will have made it a little easier for
you. You're correct, Madam Chair. Miracles do happen. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, first I think you got most of this committee just by mentioning Chatfield. You say Representative Davids, but seriously, Representative Hausman, how does this affect the debt limit? Where are we with that?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Chair, and Representative Erdahl, we absolutely we had them in early, and we sit down with them and specifically ask that question. And it's one of the reasons why you hear me very nervous about some of these other bonding authorizations, the bigger ones. I think I talked about the tobacco securitization of the Vikings and the Rochester one, and now we have this new one, which is the University of Minnesota hospital one, where they're proposing potentially appropriation bonds like Rochester. So I'm always a little cranky about those things, because I know those are worthy projects, but I do believe that the traditional GO bonding that we do for higher ed, for wastewater infrastructure, for local roads and bridges is all important. And I would say I should link the two speeches that were just made. Representative Davids mentioned TOURS, and you mentioned Chatfield. That's a project we've actually been, the Capital Investment Committee, granted not all of these members, has been there twice. And so some of us know that particular one, and that is one I will tell you, when you've been working on one project for 10 years, you just wish you could get it done. So because you have another exciting project down there, which we hope to visit. We have not visited the Trout Center, and we've heard some, since your presentation, we've heard really some people who are excited about that possibility.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just continuing a little bit, you know, historically, this is not the bonding year, this is the budget year, and we still do bonding bills roughly between $200 and $250 million on the first year of the biennium, and the second year is usually $700 to $800 million. I'm just, and maybe this is presumptive of me, but just wondering, Representative Hausman, if you've given any thought to what type of bonding bill you're looking at next year if we were to do one this year in the $700 to $800 million range.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erdahl. You know, every time a press person says to me, this isn't a bonding year, I said, look at the history. It is always a bonding year. And it's not $250 million 1 year and $750 million the next. That's the forecasted number. But in reality, it never happens that way. When Representative Dorman wrote his last two bonding bills, both years he wrote a bill, they were just, I mean, approaching $1 billion 2 years in a row. So that idea that we have a non-bonding year and a bonding year, or that we have a small bonding bill, and it's just not borne out in history, if you just look back. So we keep saying that, repeating that. And one of the things that I remember Representative Howe is suggesting is there's something to be said for all of those construction industries who bid for these jobs of evening this out. Instead of this kind of high-low of having a steady flow, that there might be something more advantageous about a regular stream of funding instead of the highs and lows, but just part of the conversation.
Members, I see no other questions, and just a couple reminders. Members, we will meet again on Thursday to mark up and final passage of the bonding bill, but also a reminder that the amendment deadline, Chair Hausman has asked, we have amendments in by 10 a.m. Tomorrow, Wednesday, April 10th, so the public can see them and we can see them and we can fully vet them on Thursday. So, see no other business. The committee is adjourned.